Okay, so welcome actually to our second meeting on Nehemiah. What I'd like to do, if you don't mind, is to, I want to shut that, the music. What I'd like to do is to go over the essential points that we did before so we can get a, first of all, we can get a video recording. And secondly, so that we can do more at one time to sort of see a picture, which I don't think we had an opportunity to really get last time, because we were focusing very much on the Simchat Torah and the Rosh Hashanah and Sukkah connections, which were important for last week when we were right after Sukkot, are less important now because it won't add that much to people's understanding, unfortunately. So let us begin with an overall sense of the way in which this Sefer develops. Now, we have to understand that this Sefer Nehemiah is not coming in a vacuum. We just finished the entire story of Sefer Ezra, you will recall. So, in Sefer Ezra, we already had, and Lamaisa the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Michti, Ko Mili de Ezra Nehemiah Kosva, which is, as we saw, Rashi says, it means Rove, because the fact is that Sefer Nehemiah is Rove of the total content, and it includes a great deal from Sefer Ezra as well, and therefore we're saying, look, if Nehemiah was the one who wrote it, why don't we give him at least his own book? The Gemara asks that he should be called Nehemiah. Of course, we have this book which we call Nehemiah, but Chazal don't. So in the Choftal at Sifrei Tanakh, there is no separate book Nehemiah, there's only the book of Ezra, which includes Nehemiah. Why that is, we'll get back to. But the question right now is, in order to fully understand what is going on over here, we have to recognize that this is a continuation of events that took place much before and are coming in a way to make everything that took place earlier in Ezra, for the first time, real, sustainable, and long-lasting, which is pretty much of a shock, because we've already had two aliyot, you remember. We had the aliyah that came early on, and that was with 12,000 people, and that was the first aliyah that was described back in Sefer Ezra, where we had the aliyah of we're not quite certain who it is, it's Shesh Batzar, it's called, with 12,000 people, all apparently from the Zera Malucha, and then we had Zerubbabel's Aliyah, also with another 30,000 people, and Ezra's truma to all of this was that he was empowered by the Melech to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash, and to restore the Aveda, and to be Miyachis Yisrael, and to be given the rights of Mishpat. And those rights of Mishpat are defined in Sefer Ezra. They cover a vast land area from the other side of the Yarden, as you would look at it when you're in Bavel. Now, for some reason, not much came of that. And that's really weird. And it's to such an extent surprising that even though the Gemara says that our beginning of the Pasuk here, which is Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachalia, Vayi b'chodesh kislev shnat esrim, and it doesn't say shnat esrim to what? Shnat esrim v'ani ayiti b'shushan habira. So the Gemara says shnat esrim, we find shnat esrim used also for the dating of Artaxerxes, as we'll see. So this must be the same shnat esrim, which would mean that essentially this is 14 years after the completion of the Beis HaMikdash, because up until the second year of Daryavesh, who is called Artaxerxes, so we find that the Beis HaMikdash wasn't built. Ezra comes in the third year and is able to undo the damages that had been caused by the tremendous Hitnagdut to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, where even after Koresh had announced that the Jews have a right to go back, and we know the Gemara that says Koresh was called Mishichi, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was angry that Koresh should have actually pushed for the Aliyah But he didn't push, and in the end, only 40,000 people went back. We know, as we mentioned last week as well, that there's the amazing sheet of the Ramban that actually, when Koresh made his announcement, most of the Jews went back, and that it's only afterwards they dribbled back to Bavel again when they saw that nothing was happening. And the reason nothing was happening was because, remember, that many of the Goyim had moved in to what was once the territory of Yisrael, and they were not very happy with the idea of the building of a Beis HaMikdash that they saw as the beginning of a resurgence of the Jews. And so as happened back in Sefer Ezra, they asked to be part of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. But these were not just Goyim. These were Goyim who had become deeply involved in the Jewish Yishuv, particularly through intermarriage. And that intermarriage turned them into what was known as Baalei Brit, as we'll see. And because of that, they had a tremendous amount of political power. Now, what happened is that Ezra, you'll recall, is the famous Gemara in Erechim, Lo lachem v'lanu livnot Beit Elokim, that the people that had been settled there on purpose by the Goyim, that they moved into Kutim, that's still from earlier, and all the others that had moved in since, they don't have the right to build the Beis HaMikdash in any way. They can't be mishtate from the binyan of the Beis HaMikdash. And from there we learn halachas about if a guy wants to be a shituf and building a Beit HaKnesset, what kind of things he's allowed to give, what kind of things we don't accept, and so on and so forth. So that was established by Ezra. The result of Ezra's very fine attempt to keep the Beis HaMikdash tahar, to keep the Yichusim clear, and to even wait until he was able to bring along Levim and the knas that he gave to the Levim because they didn't come, he was entirely focused on the Beis HaMikdash. We know that because, as Tosis points out, it doesn't make any sense to say that all of a sudden Nehemiah is coming to build Yerushalayim. Didn't Ezra build Yerushalayim 14 years earlier? And therefore, he wants to say that maybe 14 years is actually from Koresh, Shnas Esrim from Koresh, which brings us indeed to the third year of Daryavesh, and that therefore this is the description essentially from the other point of view of the building of the Beis HaMikdash through Nehemiah's intercession, which then joins up with Ezra. That's kineged almost all of the Gemaras, Lamaisa, the Pashtas of the Gemaras. And so Tosis finally comes out with, you know what? Maybe the reality is that Ezra indeed was from that third year. The Beis HaMikdash was built third, fourth, fifth, and sixth year. They made the Siyum of the Beis HaMikdash, and everything went according to Ezra's vision, but didn't go anywhere. Why didn't it go anywhere? Because you'll notice that all Nehemiah cares about here is about Yerushalayim, specifically, and not about the Kohanim, not about the Mishpachot HaLeviim, not even, according to the Malbim, about the Am that had come with Ezra, who indeed had political support because he came with the backing of the government, and to whom the description in the Pasuk that says how horrible their situation was doesn't seem to apply properly. And therefore, he understands that the Malbim, the question whether this is accurate or not is not as important as the clarity of the underlying fact that the Ezra movement is entirely different than the Nehemiah movement. And that is very important, both as an understanding of why Lemaisa, the two Sfarim, are Mecholet between Ezra and Nehemiah, even though they're called Ezra, we'll see why. But also because of the implications for how necessary Nehemiah is for the success of Ezra. Now, let's take a look at that next pasuk and see what it was that Nehemiah was looking for. Because it is so strikingly different than everything that that Ezra was focused on, that it's almost as if we're talking about two completely different visions. And Enoch Inami, according to those of these two visions, they may have taken place simultaneously. It's not the pshat that any of the other Rishonim essentially accept. But whether it's simultaneous or whether it's 14 years apart is not important. What's important is that they really are two different versions. So let's see what bothered Nehemiah. Vayavo Hanani Echad Miachai Huva Anashim Yehuda. So one of an ach doesn't necessarily mean obviously a literal ach, although some take it that way. But an ach always means we know all over Anashim Achim Anachnu, or even later on, like we use it today, it came to mean a friend, which is how many of the Mefarshim understands it, the Mesivta stuff it says. It means a friend of mine that I knew from before. Somebody I could trust. Huva Anashim Yehuda and Va'eshalin Ayudim HaPleita Ashenisharum Et HaShevi Va'ayushalam. I asked them about the escapees. I asked them about the ones that were left from the Shevi. Now, some understand that indeed this means not that he asked them about the Ezra people. Those weren't the people that were Nishar Menas Shevi. Those were people that were being supported by the government. Nishar Menas Shevi means the ones perhaps who had never left Eretz Yisrael. And indeed it's quite clear, even from archaeological findings, that there was no settlement that had been completely broken in Eretz Yisrael. Indeed, there was a continual settlement that even though the Nebuchadnezzar and those after had continued the mice of the Churban and moving the Jews, but again, we know that the Dalat Haaretz were left behind. And we know that to such extent that they were left behind, that HaKadosh Baruch had already offered Yochanan ben Kireach the possibility of a complete and total restoration of Eretz Yisrael, even though it would be built literally of the Dalat Haaretz. So then that means if he's looking for the Pleita specifically, Min HaShevi, so that's the first thing I wanted to know. What about those that escaped the Golos? Or, if we don't understand it that way, it means what about those that had come after Koresh, where the Ramban understands, and were indeed escapees from the ones that went back to Bavel, so they were Nisharu from the Shevi, and they were not maybe benefited by what Ezra had done, which will turn out to be very significant. And another question I had, the Al Yerushalayim. I wanted to know the status of Yerushalayim. And as Rashi points out, this means Al Yerushalayim, Al Inyan Ha'ir, Sha'al Te'alayim. Quite aside, which is really strange, quite aside from the situation of the people, you think, okay, that's what my interest is. I want to know, how is the city doing? Now, what do you mean when you say, how is the city doing? I mean, are we talking about the Beis HaMikdash? No. We know how the Beis HaMikdash is doing. Beis HaMikdash was rebuilt. The rebuilding was celebrated. But he's talking about Yerushalayim as a city. And that means that he has a completely different vision. And we're going to see. He builds on that when he even refuses to call, in the next paragraph, refuses to call Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, to the king when he's trying to get permission to rebuild. He calls it the city of the Kvarot, of my relatives. You know, it has personal, emotional significance, blah, 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 without in any way making any type of political or religious significance to Yerushalayim. And that, too, is in and of itself an important point, as we'll see when we get there. But, and again, as the Malbim points out, the answer came separately about the Yehudim of the Pleita and the Matzav of Yerushalayim, qua Yerushalayim. So that means they understood very clearly. He was asking about two issues. And therefore they answered him, A, you asked about Pleita Nisharu. Well, we'll tell you. HaNisharim, which you asked, quote, Asher Nisharum and HaShevi, that's what you asked, right? Okay, well, we're going to tell you the truth. They are there in the Medina, Bera'ah Gedolah V'Cherpa. You asked about Yerushalayim, Chomat Yerushalayim Miforetzet, U'Sha'areha Nitztu V'Esh. The same Churban has not been touched. The burned down gates to Yerushalayim from the time of Nebuchadnezzar are still burnt down. It's as if nothing happened. So there may be a Beit HaMikdash there. The implications about the way that people are living, and the vision, and you'll notice this very important word, Shambamedina. Shambamedina, what does that mean, Bamedina? When you're talking about the state of Israel with their Declaration of Independence. But Medina, remember, has a very specific halachic meaning. I mean, Medina, you know, it's a machlokas, the Rambam, in terms of whether Yerushalayim, when there is a Chomat Yerushalayim, that is Mekudesh, and so on, whether that has a din of Mikdash, it has a din of Medina. But we know under certain circumstances, of course, we mean specifically the Mikdash versus the Medina, which would include aspects that are outside of Beis HaMikdash. Medina, by definition, means a place of social contract. That's the concept of din. Achvat ha-medinot, the lashon of the Misavat Yesharim, mediniyut, medinut, throughout the Middle Ages meant the social contract. In which case, what they're saying to him is something that means a great deal to him. They're saying that there is no real functional medina. Things are horrific. So if you're associated with the Beis HaMikdash, and that was Ezra's vision, and so he has everything split up over here into the Mishmarot Takuna, into the Mishpachot Alaviyim, which we learned about back in Ezra, and their support crew, basically support for the Beis HaMikdash. Anybody who's not directly a part of that effort, this is the way many of the Rishonim understand, in the Sharim, in Apleta, they are in the Medina, and they don't have the future. And so, Vayikra Shomi at HaDevarim HaEle Yashavti, this lotion of Yashavti, say the Meforshim means Yashavti literally. Yashavti, lotion of Shiva. I sat Shiva. So Yashavti Ve'evkeh Ve'etabla Yamim. So this was his din, Shloshi Yamim of Bechi for Avelus. And because of that, the shock to me was unbelievable. And I was in a state of tinyus and davening in front of Elohe HaShamayim. But the point is, as Avram Avinu pointed out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu many years before, Elohe HaShamayim, Elohe HaAretz is, you used to be only Elohe HaShamayim. Remember, you owe me that one. Because since I came, I was Mefarsin at Shimcha, and you became Elohe HaAretz. So he seems to be making a point with him. I had a lot of words to say to Elohe HaShamayim, who no longer seems to be present on the earth and isn't doing very much for the earth. Now, you'll say, okay, I mean, it's taken an awful lot out of that word, but it isn't, you see. Because this is exactly the period when they crossed out the words of Ha'el, Agadol, Agibor, Vanora. And therefore, as the Gemara tells us, in the end it was the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah who are called Gedolah because they were the ones who actually restored. Remember, and they said, no, even though, look, we can't lie to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know. So Yirmiyo cuts out. Yeah, one word is, I mean, you can't say no ra when they, look at this, it's horrible. Daniel cuts out the gibor, you know, well, what kind of gibor? The goyim are sitting around doing whatever they want, that's called no ra'ot. He lets them get away with murder, that's called gvura, it's terrible. So ask the Gemara to stand, but Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who said, Ayala gadala gibor vanavra. I mean, who are you to go and to say, as Yirmiyahu did, Nochri Mekarkarim Be'echalo, the Gemara Yuma says, where's the Nora? Oh, so you refuse to say Nora. Daniel says, it's worse than that. Nochri Mishtabdim Be'vanav, where's Givuratav? Lo Amar Gibor. Came along the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, and they restored it. You know where the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah restored it? In Sefer Nehemiah. Now that's strange, because it was Ezra that the Gemara's Medayik restored it. Why? Because it says that they called out, and the whole story when they were being Mavato, the Yetzirah, they called out to El Hashem Elokim Hagadol. No, so the Gemara says, what do you mean? What's Hagadol supposed to mean? So one man, the Arba, says it means Gidlo B'Shem HaMeforash. But in the end, the Gemara comes out, no, that's not the Pshat. The Pshat is that they restored the Shem. So Hashem Elohim HaGadol was the restoration that became the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. Based on that Shem HaGadol. But they then said, Akel HaGadol HaGibor VaNora, which hadn't been in use since the time of Yirmiyahu. Now, is that significant to our story? I suggest that it's very, very significant to our story. So let's understand that essentially what this is saying is that this book is the story of the reconstruction of the Medina. Nehemiah has no interest in restoring the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash has been around for 14 years. He doesn't even ask about it. What he wants to know is, so how come nothing's happening? And indeed, his friends who come, Hanani, understands very clearly what he's saying. You're asking about two things which essentially are fundamentally related. You want to know about the city of Yerushalayim, Qua Yerushalayim, and you're asking about the people that remained from the days before the Churban, the ones that had remained after coming up from Koresh when everyone else ran away. So we understand, you're asking, is there a social structure? Is there a country? Or have we become merely a Beis HaMikdash? And all that we want is a place of worship. So we understand that that's your point. So we're telling you straight out, the Medina, forget about it. It's in terrible shape. It's in terrible shape, and Nehemiah immediately understands what that means, is that Ezra has failed. And that Ezra's approach has failed. Because you will recall when we learned Ezra that his entire rationale to the Belach of why it's kedai to build the Beis HaMikdash is a description of the tremendous bracha that comes to Beis HaMikdash, the entire world, and the goyim that will support the Beis HaMikdash will indeed be zeicha. And that's the whole story that Koresh says, yes, you have to be mitpalil there for me and my children and my success and so on. Because of that, as Mepharshim point out, Ezra couldn't even ask for military support. Because what an idiot he would look like. That would be like Bilam who needed a sword to kill it. You know, no, all I need to do is say something and everyone drops dead. You know, but when it comes to my donkey, I need a sword. So he's going to come along now and he's telling Koresh, oh my God, I mean, the Dariavish, I have no idea what's coming. I mean, it's amazing. And yeah, you know, but I'll need some help, of course, for some of your troops, because otherwise I'll get my head handed to me. He couldn't do that. So he ended up being given only the rights that he asked for. We need to assert the Bezdin and the Kechatera. And this became Ezra Sefer, who reconstructs the whole Sefer Torah. He now is Mechadesh, or else he restores the Ksav Ashuris that had gone out of fashion, and people were, everything was chulin. This is the way most of the Farshim understand it. That, of course, originally, this we see from the Mem V'Samach, that they were Emet B'Nes and Aluchais, that the Tzura of the Mem V'Samach was Ksav Ashuris, initially. But the darga of the Kedusha of Ksav Ashuris was such that in the end they were Mevato the Yusuf Ashuris. And so everybody started using and only recognized the Ksav Ivri. And then when he came back, he created the entire dinim of the Kedusha, Sefer Torah, and the Hakpada Dafka to use Ksav Ashuris across the board. Which is tremendous Kiddush. But it's all part of Ezra's search for what he kept calling back in Sefer Ezra, Zera Kodesh. His work on Yichusim was all about Zera Kodesh. His work on making certain that the Goyim had nothing to do with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, purity, Zera Kodesh. His work on making sure that everybody would divorce their wives who were not Jewish was based on his own Kiddush. Doesn't say in the Torah you're not allowed to marry a goyim. Says you're not allowed to marry from the Amramim, the Shiva Amramim that were in Eretz Yisrael, and that there'll be a mokesh, and so on and so forth. This halacha, that is an iser, the Yeraisa, not everybody's mekamo. I mean, the source of it is his drasha then, that insisted that they had no right to marry the mechatzra. We think all these people came and married goyim when it was a beferish, a pesuk of the Torah, not to marry them. No. They held that it was heter, because these goyim were not from the original Shiva Amami. So what's wrong if we marry them? And on the rabbi, you know, we'll get them to be Megayer ultimately, and it's fine. See, he was the one that made such a fuss, and he was the one that had to be Metayer everything. And did it work? No. When the Chena comes 14 years later, everybody's married to goyim. So instead, it turns out that this whole idea of creating an Am through Ruchnias, creating an Am through the tremendous gatherings that he had of, you know, tearing his hair and then lying on the ground and crying and getting people really churned up, you know, and they all commit themselves to, you know how long that kind of thing lasts, you know. And sure enough, 14 years later, they're all a bunch of idiots again, because nothing ever changed. Because he never did anything, Ezra. He made tremendous changes in terms of the Tfisa of Terah. But the Tfisa of Terah doesn't change anything for people. And in the same way, this is how we started discussing the relationship to Simchas Terah, and the way in which the Am... Remember, we spoke about an amazing Gemara about Achav, that it's the fact that the Zikanim were there didn't mean anything. Maybe Machmad Einecha refers to an Avodah Zarah. Well, no, Machmad Einecha, that's his schus, 22 years for the 22 letters of the Sefer Torah that was Machabe. How do you know it means that? Maybe it doesn't mean Avodah Zarah. And says Gemara, well, it can't be. It says Zikne Yisrael. Ask the Gemara, Zikne Yisrael. Zikne Yisrael says the same thing by the wonderful eights of the Zikne Yisrael, Tav Sholem, to go do Arias in public, that everybody will know that they'll never be able to have his father back. That says Zikne Yisrael, means we're showing him. Yes, says the Gemara, it's true. But by Achav, it says not only the Zikanim, it says the Am. The Am can't be Rishayim. The Gedalei Torah can be Rishayim. The Zikne Yisrael can be Rishayim. The Am is going to be Rishayim. It's not Shaykh. It's got to be. The Am never did. The taxi drivers with the Rishayim. I mean, there's got to be tons of tzaddikim among the taxi drivers. Fine. That's very much what we feel about Simchas Torah as well. It's the Karum Zulus of Neadam. It's a holiday that was created by people, by Amei Aretz, and by people in Chutz La'aretz, and so on and so forth, which ties in directly to the idea of Dala Sa'aretz, the lowest of the low that remained. Or, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu offered, we talked about on Tzom Gedalia, offered Yochanan ben Kereach. I know nobody is here, so what? I'm promising you. You stay, I rebuild like you never had before. I guarantee it. Who's here to rebuild with? Taxi drivers. Fine. That's great. Or, as Yechezkel points out, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, look, I told Tzidkiyahu's children, accept the fact to be a mamlacha shefela. Be a third world country. Stop believing you have to be on top of the world. And you made a promise to Nebuchadnezzar with a shvuah. And then you were Mechal al Hashem by being over on your Shvuah. So I'm supposed to protect you and not Nebuchadnezzar. Are you crazy? And this, of course, was the end of that whole thing. The inability to accept that the Yeshua comes from bottom up, not from Beis HaMikdash down. There has to be a Medina, which has amazing implications for our own period, in which we will see that Nehemiah took exactly the opposite approach of Ezra. And what Nehemiah did is he specifically, we'll see the next part, specifically asked for military backing. He was an immensely aware politician who knew exactly how to deal with all the people that were the Bali breed. He didn't hesitate from using all kinds of nasty force, many, many different ways to achieve his ends. He rebuilt in a massive rebuilding effort that became, in our times, the same idea of Choma and Migdal, in which overnight they would build these Chomot. That came consciously. That came from Nehemiah. And that was done throughout the Galil to protect new Yishuvim from Arabs overnight. That's almost what he attempted to do in Yerushalayim. As close to overnight it could be done. Before they had a chance to get their forces together and to prevent the rebuilding, he rebuilt the Medina. And it's called Medina. And nobody understands why. This is why. This was the entire vision of Nehemiah. Build the Medina. Then the Beis HaMikdash can mean something. As it is, it doesn't mean anything. Amazingly, this is brought out in the very name that we'll see he's called in relationship to the king. So he's called not Nehemiah, but he's called Nehemiah, who has the other name, which is Hatarshata. See, come on, what kind of weird name is Hatarshata? Sounds weirdly like Artaxerxes is the king. Was this going to play on word? No, Hatarshata means the guy that they were hitir shtia. They were matir him to drink wine of a god. And that becomes his name. You understand? It's not a small issue. That's his name. Okay, so people say, oh yeah, all right, fine. So, you know, we need to know who he is. How come he was drinking wine? I mean, wasn't it us, sir? Yeah, you know, they had to be moderate because he was appointed, as we'll see in the next parak, he was appointed to be the one who was magish the wine to the king. That's all we need. He needed to taste the wine. He was also a poison taster, you understand? Before you feed it to the king, you pour a little bit out. You taste it to show that it's not poisoned, obviously. So therefore, we need it to be mater. Ach! Misses the whole point. Because we're going to see in the next parak that he himself identifies the fact that he was allowed to drink the wine as the reason that he was able to achieve all of this. Why? Because he became the king's drinking buddy. You understand that a drinking buddy has got all kinds of abilities that nobody else does. And that's exactly why the Torah asks for drinking, remember. You'll start drinking and then you'll marry. That is the way the Rabbanan extended Yayin Nesach to be a general din. Stay away from it. You'll end up marrying their daughters and so on and so forth. Unbelievable. This is a direct hamshach of Esther. The idea of Esther is that the Geula comes from Keri. The Geula comes as a secular holiday, not a religious holiday. The Hester of Anochi Esther Astir is part of the built-in development of the Pnei HaGeula, as Ramban identifies, as the real meaning of Anochi Esther Astir. Is that Esther? What does all of this mean in terms of Pnei HaGeula? So even when you're in the midst of the most astonishing developments, you don't even notice what's going on. You take it for granted and assume that, yeah, you know, I'm coming out going no egg. And that means, if you want to think of the most amazing thing, the Mesil Sisharm, the Remez, the Mesil Sisharm, is outstanding. Because something the Mesil Sisharm said, nobody understands, such a chutzpah, my gosh. So he's defining what it means. Alechet bidrachav, goshi tiferes, loseah, tiferes lo min ha'adam. So the Mesil Sisharm says, yes, what does that mean? This is in the Hagdama, right? Klal, what is that? Klal calls it, Shein haga adam kol midotav, v'chol minei pu'ulotav, al pi hayosher, והמוסר. וחללו חכמים זכרונם לברכה עם מסכת אבות, קושי תפארת לו עושה ותפארת לו מן האדם. Which I can tell you very simply what that means. Dehainu, want to hear what that means? Kol haolech el tachlit ha-hatava ha-amitit. Everything that achieves the ultimate true good. And what is the ultimate true good? Tachlit ha-hatava ha-amitit. Dehainu. And notice, whereas, because he's getting up to this, right? Dehainu, shetolata. The first part sounds good. Chizuk haTorah, yeah, that's good. That was Ezra's approach. Chizuk haTorah, yeah, but Mr. Shram says, but that's not the end. And wait till you're going to faint when you hear the next part. V'tikun achvat hamedinot. Sounds like a conservative rabbi. You know, there's two important things in the world. The social contract and relationships between societies. And the chizukat Torah. And those are the two things that are the tachlit of hatava amitit. It's amazing. And of course the Rambam himself says even worse than that. Because when he explains why it is that the Dover cotton is so choshev, and yes, the Davar Chotan is very choshev, not only because you can't understand the Davar HaGadol in Pardes until you have a Davar Chotan, but because it was the Tova HaGedola, the same language, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us for Yishuv HaOlam HaZeh. Amazing. So all of this is basically when the Chemi decides. First the Davar Chotan, then the Davar HaGadol. Let's have a Medina and then see whether our Beis HaMikdash does something. Let's create the space. Let's create the mechitzas. And we pointed out that when we were in the Midbar, even in the Midbar, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvah on the Mishkan, and the entire Am is surrounding the Mishkan, and everything is built on Mishkan, 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 we go immediately from the Hashlama of the Mishkan into the Hashlama of the Machaneh. So that all of the dinim that afterwards become the Hashrah of the Mishkan throughout Yisroel are built on the dinim of the Machaneh, Shiluach Tameim and Birkas Kayanim, and the dinim of Nezirus, and everything else that is involved in the Darga, including Seita, and the most intimate things, the Darga of Kedusha Yisroel. They come from being able to expand a Mishkan into a Medina. So there needs to be, remember the Machaneh, it's Keneged Machaneh Yisro, which is Keneged Yerushalayim. That space, the creation of that space, which in the Midbar was created Be'etzem in advance of the Hashras Hashkinah and the Mishkan. That's exactly what it is that Nehemia is out to achieve. And because of that, everything that in Ezra didn't work is redone in Nehemia, and it works. And basically, these small beginnings that HaKadosh Baruch Hu offered in terms of Mamlach HaShvela, or offered in terms of Dalat HaAretz, the truth is that small beginnings need to be small. So the political and military agenda that he had, Nehemia, was part of the success. Becoming a drinking buddy was part of the success. In exactly the same way that Esther achieved what she achieved, not by being Mrs. well-known spiritualist, but by being the most beautiful girl in the country, by being the one who can seduce the melech, by being the one who creates the body buddy for the king. And here we continue, and as we pointed out last week, the drinking buddy paraphrases Esther and the Gemara's about Esther even more than Esther did. So when she says, Imal HaMelech Tov, Imatzati Chein, Beine HaMelech, all of which Chazal say, well, of course, wherever it says HaMelech, and really, it means Melech Machayam Lachim. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, yeah, so as we said, you take that a little bit with a grain of salt. I mean, come on, you know. What she's really being mitkav. And over here, And the next parak, Nehemiah says openly that that's what I was mechaving to. Take a look at Berg Beis. Vayi b'chodesh nisan shnat esrim l'tachshas ta'amelech, which is the mocker of the gzera shava that the Gemara makes. Shnat esrim gzera shava. Yayin lefanav v'esata yayin v'tnel l'melech v'lo yitira lefanav. What does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means when Haman came to Achashverosh, he said, v'lamelech ein shoveh la'anicham. So Gemara says, why in Shovel Anicham? Im Adoni HaMelech, im Zvuv nofel etoch hakos shelechemeyem, uzorek et hazvuv v'shoteh et hakos. Aval im Adoni HaMelech nogea bakos, im zorkim et hakos. And therefore, ein Shovel Anicham. These people are crazy. Lo yiti ra lefanav, you know? It wasn't so bad. And we were good friends. And so, Vayomerli HaMelech, you know, Melech is a friend of mine. He treats me the way Yosef treated his people. Hey, Madu Apanecha Ra'im, how come you look so sad today, you know? You're not sick. I see you're not sick. This is a mental problem. Hein Zekim Ro'alev, look, you're depressed. What the hell is wrong? V'ira Harbe Mo'od, now I sense this is the moment. This is the moment. So what do? You take a look what he says in Perek Dalet. Vayomli Amelach Amaza Adam Vakesh, Vaet Palel El Elohei Hashamayim, VaOmar LaMelech Ima LaMelech Tov VeNitav Avdecha LaFan. That's his tefillah, Elohei Hashamayim. He's talking to the king, but he's talking to Elohei Hashamayim. See, Mamish takes on the approach of Esther completely. And that's the way in which he gets everything that he wants. This becomes an integral part of his success. Ezra duplicates Moshe Rabbeinu, but Nehemiah duplicates Esther. And that makes a tremendous difference in terms of the success in the period of Anochi, Aster Aster. And this, remember, remains Aster Aster. There is no Shechina in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Pnei HaGeula, therefore, is a gradual development. And the truth is, I mean, we don't even know, after this beginning, we don't know exactly how it is that this beginning provided all of the roots for the development of a full country that we see years later, was able to take on the Greeks and was able to take on the Romans and became, in fact, an entire Medina in the full sense of the word and wasn't only dependent on a Mikdash in Yerushalayim. The gradual development of those places and the number of different cities that are mentioned later on, the broadening of the Gvulot, how long that took to happen, the exact process of how it happened isn't clear. But it is clear that this was the beginning. And it's obvious that that's the case because the Goyim were devastated by the success of the walls of Yerushalayim. More devastated by far than they had been by the success of the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Which means that they were aware that they had less to fear from a spiritual center of the Jews, which is what? That's basically religion. So you want to turn Yerushalayim into Borough Park. That's basically what you've done. So you built the Beis HaMikdash. So now they have Babav. No? Looks like the Beis HaMikdash, because many people in the Beis HaMikdash. Same thing. But that's the whole idea that he brings out Nehemiah. That's not the solution. And from there, we're not going to end up with the Medina that we're looking to create. And so because of that, he takes literally the opposite approach. And in his book, we find indeed the restoration of all of the things that were never achieved, even from the Amos Yehoshua ben Nun, as it says in the Gemara. It says Befresh in the Pasuk. So it says, you know, there were no sukkahs like this. Mi Amos Yehoshua ben Nun, because they were zocha to the things that sukkahs is ultimately for. The destruction of the Yetzer Hara. The rebuilding of Olam Haba. Not just of Olam Hazeh. The Yom HaNashek. The Milchemes Gog u'Magog. The makor of all of it is here. Not in the vision that we have from the first Beis HaMikdash, but Adarabah, the vision that begins with the second Beis HaMikdash, in which they were Kailo, as the Rambam says in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, in which they were Kailo, whatever they could understand of the vision of Yechezkel for the third Beis HaMikdash, and which becomes indeed the roots closer to the third Beis HaMikdash than the Beis HaMikdash HaRishon. And that's the Gadol Yehiyah HaBayit HaZeh. And the ultimate godless of this Bayit, undoubtedly, Gedula, relates to the El Elohim HaGadol Shegidlo, the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, in which what appears to us to be small, and we said this was the Kirun Zulut Livnei Adam, which is the Shir Shoyom of Simchas Teres and from Shemini Atzeres, that in that lies all of the ultimate tikkunim. So this is the introduction to what it is that he's doing. And so what he says, continuing in Pasuk Hey, Va'omar, Ana Adonai Elohi HaShamayim, and already he takes the first step to undo Yirmiyahu Ha'el HaGadol VaHaNora. He doesn't have the guts yet to say HaGibor, but Ha'el HaGadol VaHaNora, Shomer HaBris, V'Chesed Lo'ohavav, V'Loshomrei Mitzvosav. That part we know. That's already a quote. Lo'ohavav V'Shomrei Mitzvotav. But I'm asking more than that. I'm asking, I want your ears to be attuned, to be listening for any. Kashevet means you are waiting to identify a coal. Now wait, we have to get through to you. And there's still a tremendous difference. Kashevet. It's not I want you to listen. I want you to be attuned to hear. With Einecha Petuchot in advance, waiting to identify something you can respond to. Because, as we'll see, I know the situation stinks. Yes. But I also see the roots of Tikkun. And I want you to live with me with the roots of Tikkun, just as I understand the Binyan of Yerushalayim to be the roots of Tikkun. And therefore I ask you, Yishmael Tevilat Avdecha, Ashanochi mitpalel afanecha hayom yomam v'alayla al bnei Yisrael avadecha. And not only that, but for almost the first time, we find somebody who's ready to admit the real vidui. Not only I was chayte, but ani ubeit avi mitvadel chatot bnei Yisrael asher chatanu la v'ani ubeit avi chatanu. Which is, as the Rambam says, you can't get anywhere. These ta'aniyot that he had, and these tefillot that he had, were the same vision of ta'aniyot that the Rambam defines in Ilchot Ta'aniyot, in which the person is finally able to identify the pattern that keeps destroying all of our efforts for reconstruction. And once you identify the pattern, you understand that that pattern, even though it has all types of new faces, and all types of new phases and different levels of sophistication, it's the same insane pattern, which unless you can get out of, you don't have a chance. Chavol chavalnu lo. This is a double meaning, beautiful double meaning. Chavol chavalnu, of course, the simple meaning is chabalah. We've been, you know, terrible in how we have hurt you. The other meaning, chavol chavalnu, is a lashon of Mishkan. Because the Mishkan is called a Mashkan. Mishkan, Mishkan Hashem, right? Mishkan Ha'idud. Why is it Mishkan, Mishkan? Because the Mishkan was mitmashken twice. So chavol chavalnu lach. So we have indeed become a Mashkan twice and have indeed lost the Mishkan, even though we understood all along that it's going to be lost if we don't treat it as a mashkin, and that it keeps us hanging until. Please mute yourself. Somebody said, Gavi, I think you need to mute yourself. Gavi? Yeah, it's too much noise coming in. There we go. Okay. And yet there's another intricate meaning in the Chavol Chavalma. And that is, Chavalah is also a lashon of joining up together. Because a Chevel of Nevi'im is a bunch of people together, right? Chevel Nevi'im. You'll notice that all the words, a Chabura, Chabura means an attack, something on you, right? But it also means a group of people to do something together. Lo titgo to do means the same thing. Don't tear your skin. But it also means don't get together as different groups in the same city. So all these three words have the same double meaning and are merames to the dangers of chavalah that come from making groups. Yes, so I understand we've made tremendous number of different, you know, tikkunim and everything. But the fact is that chaval chavamu lach, because of it, v'lo shamarnu et ha-mitzvot et ha-kukim et ha-mishpatim asher tzivita et Moshe avdecha. So remember what you said. Zechor na et ha-davar asher tzivita et Moshe avdecha limor. Atem timalu, you're screwed. Ani afitz etchem ma'amim. Amazing language. There's not even if. Im atem timalu, boom. Ani afitz etchem. Okay. But also, part of that is, and I say it in this way on purpose, of course, because look how real that was. But there's another thing that was just as real. V'shaftem elai. No, v'im. V'shaftem elai. I don't care. Now, my question to you, therefore, is what do you mean with V'shaftei Melai? Because V'shaftei Melai, when you said Atem Timalu, you didn't define the Atem Timalu. You did. Tariq Mitzvah, I don't know what it takes. All I know is, man, it sure as heck happened, you know? You said, Atem Timalu, okay, sure as heck happened. They say V'shaftei Melai, many dargas of tshuva, you know? But that V'shaftei Melai, you said, I don't care where you are, I'm going to bring you all back. Now, I want you to notice that these people are all Avadech, Armecha, Asher Padita, Bikochacha, Gadol of Yadcha, Chazaka. I mean, back in Mitzrayim, were they really any better? I thought it was like sort of Memta Shari Tuma, you know? So all you looked for over there was, you know, remez, a mitzvah, give a mitzvah, see if they respond to the mitzvah. Do they want to be Shomer Mitzvahs? Not that they had to be Shomer Mitzvahs, but they have a vision, ultimately they'll be Shomer Mitzvahs. So I think that these people, you're right, they're not the best of people, but they want to be the best of people. So now, why don't we look at it like this? Ana Adonai, Tehina Oznecha Kashevet HaTfilat Avdecha, as I asked you before. But now, since you're listening so carefully, perhaps we could expand it to include Tfilat Avdecha HaChafetzim L'Yirat Shemecha. I admit that they don't have any Yirat Shemayim. But I ask you, would they like to have Yirat Shamayim? And this is basically, you know, the old George Harrison song, forgive them, Lord, they can't afford you. So they want to be able to be Yirat Shamayim. They just can't afford it. Okay. But that ought to be the beginning of V'shaftei Melai, right? And therefore, I believe that we can make this happen. But they need a space. They don't have a space. Hatzlichan al avdecha hayom. What I want is for you to give me a hatzlocha. I'm about to go into the king, and I am going to be giving him his wine, my drinking buddy. Good old Hatar Shata speaks. And I'm going to be coming into my drinking buddy, that guy, Lifnei Ha'ish Hazeh. I want to find favor in his eyes, you can make that happen. Vani hayiti mashke lemela. That was my job. And this whole tefillah was to make that job work. And this is an amazing opening to the sefer. Or you see the kind of person you're dealing with, what it is that he's attempting to achieve. and his consciousness of it, and the way in which he seeks to go about it. It's just a wonderful insight into the personality of Nehemiah, Juan Nehemiah as a person. And this provides for us a key to understanding the Prakim Habaim. So I'm sorry for going on so long tonight. I just thought that the introduction is valuable and that it's good to hear it as part of the first parak. And we could still include as an addendum, at least in the audio that we had last week that related the entire parak to Sukkot and to Simchas Torah and showed how the Sefer as a whole addresses the issues of Sukkot and Simchas Torah, which are themselves very, very much the way in which we achieve exactly what Ezra sought to achieve. And what it was that he sought to achieve was exactly the ideas that Sukkot to Shemini Atzeres achieve. The differentiation between Yisrael and the Umos HaElam. And how do we achieve it on Sukkot? First, by being Nehemiah. So we have the Shivim Purim, and we have the immense care for the inyanim of this space in Elam Hazeh. Simchas Torah comes afterwards. When you're trying to do it in the other direction, the way Ezra did it, doesn't work. And therefore, Nehemiah becomes a tremendous lesson in the reality of the future of Klal Yisrael, in which the Pnei HaGeula in our times is built in exactly the same fashion. And so hopefully we'll have a chance to continue next week, Bezrat Hashem, and I love you. Okay, so this is our first attempt. It's true we're going to have a lot of technical issues, but in Bezrat Hashem, things will iron themselves out. I wanted specifically to continue the Tanakh series, which we had gotten up to Nehemiah, and use Nehemiah as our break-in so that we can both address what Chaim Davies asked for earlier today, which was inyanim for Yisrochak, that would be fitting for Simchas Torah, to try to get a better sense of what's going on, and to give us a chance to break in this group so that we can, first of all, get over the technical issues, and secondly, so that we can learn to communicate on easier levels than is going to be demanded. It's going to be demanded from us when it comes to Nevi'im Achroni. So this should be relatively easy. The reason that Nehemiah has a great deal to do with the issues of Simchas Torah, I don't know if you share my feeling, but it's hard to believe that you don't, but because it seems so obvious to me, but and so built into it. But if somebody doesn't feel this way, I'd like to know. But I find Shemini Atzeres to be a very difficult time. In other words, the idea of the Yichud of Yisrael and all of the great things that we read about and that we know it's the Uma Yechida and it's supposed to. Supposed to be the time at which there's the Gilui of the special relationship to Yisrael. And instead, Simchas Torah seems to be literally out of control. I mean, it's just not a happy time. It's people trying to be happy, and they're not happy. And it's just schleppy, and it's kvetchy, and it's people that are having a much harder time than usual being mistabik to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the way I feel, that you don't see on Simchas Torah the godless of Yisrael coming out. If anything, it's a time of real wildness and unpleasantness and not the time in which you would most feel Yisrael. And that's strange. And if you take a look, amazing, if you take a look at the Shir Shoyom, we know that in Masechet Sofrim, this is the way most people have the minhag. In Masechet Sofrim, it says that the Shir Shoyom is Lamatzeach al Hashminit, which is great. Now, Lamatzeach al Hashminit sounds wonderful. That's all about Mila, Shnitna b'Shminit, and that should talk about the godless of Yisrael. The problem is that Lamatzeach al Hashminit begins with Oshia Hashem ki Gamar Chasid, Kipas Remonim Ibn Adam, there's nothing left, it's terrible, everything is a disaster. And it ends crazy, it's just not sitting along, and it ends with the Pasuk of Saviv Rishayim Yitalach and Kerum Zerut of Ne'adam, which is when things that are Kerum, am I supposed to be able to take your beautiful smile there? I'm just supposed to get you. This is what you did in the shir when you were here in person. It's intolerable. I can't concentrate on the shir. Block yourself out or something. I'm joking. So the Kerum Zulut, as the Gemara says, when things that are Beruma Shalola become Zulut, become cheap to people, Saviv Rishayim Yitalach. So that's when Rishayim just walk around freely, and there's doesn't seem to be anything to that's real. And it's unbelievable that was chosen as the Shir Shalom of Simchas Torah, because it's exactly what you feel. It's Kirum Zulut. This is supposed to be unbelievable. This is the time of, you know, maximum Chashivut, Varen Beruma Shalala, Uma Yechida, finally a Zocha, to the Gilui of all of the things in Masechet Sukkah, you know, the destruction of the Yetzer Hara, and the Hesped on the Yetzer Hara, Rafi, how come I don't get any live feed from you? And so on. And, you know, all that we find instead is Kerum Zerut of Adam, which is amazing. And that's why I think that this Sefer particularly has a very profound connection to that transition. And amazingly, the story in Sukkah, about Masechet Sukkah, about the destruction of the Yetzirah, the Bitul Yetzirah, and the story of the Baya Baya and everything else is here. It's in Nehemiah. It's that's where it says Lo Hayak Sukkot Hazot from the time of Yoshua Ben Nun. Like this was a time at which everybody thought, you know, it's awful, and this was the time of the Bitul Yetzirah, which is remarkable. It was a Bitul Yetzirah because people had given up. You know, as the Gemara says, they said, you know, what's the whole point? The whole reason that we have a Yetzer was only in Kadesh to Kabel Sechar, and all it's doing is screwing us up. So forget it. So we won't get the Sechar, but at least we won't have to go through this. So, I mean, in a sense, you know, the Gemara makes of it this whole thing, and the ultimate hesped on the Yetzer, but I mean, it was really like a desperate kind of move in which that was the Chashivas of that Sukkah. That says that they were Bavatel the Yetzirah. But even in a deeper way than that, the tone of Nehemiah is even more primitive than the tone of Ezra. In other words, you get a tremendous sense of actually being there at that time. The language is primitive. The interactions are primitive. You sense yourself back in the whole Bovel and Poras milieu. And we're going to see later on in the second paragraph, we're going to see that Nehemiah actually paraphrases Esther. And he feels himself to be continuing the same situation that she was in. This Anochi Hastir Hastir Et Panai Vayomoru. And he uses literally the words that she uses when she goes in to speak to Achashverosh, and she's really talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that she's the Imal HaMelech Tov, Imal Tzati Chen Be'inav, where she's really being miskavenet to Melech Malchei HaMelechim. And there people think, okay, that's crazy. I mean, what makes you think she's being miskavenet to Melech Malchei HaMelechim? I mean, yeah, it's a nice drasha. In Nehemiah, he says so, Beferish. It's amazing. He says, and I davened to Hashem, and I said to the king, Imal HaMelech Tov. So he announces that he's davening to Hashem. I mean, it's like the ultimate Esther kind of thing. So he's living really like a double identity in which, on the one hand, he's in the lowest of situations. They had to give Nehemiah, they actually called Nehemiah a different name. They called him Hatashatas. We'll see. He appears throughout Tanakh as Nehemiah Hatashata. Why come Hatashata, the Gemara says? Because he tir shtia, heter shata. They had to be matir him to drink wine of goyim. Why? Because that was his job. Basically, his inn with the melech was that he was the wine taster. You know, he would provide the wine. So he developed a very buddy-buddy kind of relationship around this wine, and which we'll see the significance of later. But Lamaisa, through that, and apparently that's why they were martyred, as some of the Rishonim point out, through that he was able to be poel with the melech for the Teva of Yisrael. But it's all like from really low down, essentially. It's not... It's in an amazing tefillah. I mean, he tells HaKadosh Baruch Hu that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should allow him to success of rebuilding Yerushalayim here, because when people want to have Yerushalayim, they would like to have Yirat Shamayim. I understand, you know, okay, fine. But they'd like to have Yirat Shamayim. And he comes and, like, he's facing a situation which is awful. And that's how the whole book starts, you'll see. And when he arrives, he finds, like, the population is totally assimilated. They're all married to Goyish women. You know, Chilul Shabbos is just, like, totally rampant. People are openly, you know, there's stores open on Shabbos and so on. And like, this is what he's coming to reconstruct Yerushalayim. So it's a pretty amazing kind of setting. And I have a theory, but before the theory, let's just get into it a little bit to hear a little, the sense of what's happening over here. And
ready?
Yes, sir.
Just as like a historical backdrop, the split between Ezra and Nehemiah, in other words, in terms of the actual authoring of the book.
Well, we'll get to this right away.
I guess I've heard different things.
We'll get to it right away. It's basically the first two words. It says Divrei Nehemiah.
Okay.
So that's where we have that problem. So as Chaim points out, I mean, there's actually steer in the Gemara, because the Gemara in Baba Basra talks about the fact that Ezra katav Sifro, and then in Sanhedrin it says that Nehemiah was kotev Sifro, Sefer Ezra. And as a matter of fact, there really is, as you know, no Sefer Nehemiah in the Jewish canon. It's just Sefer Ezra. So basically, I mean, Rashi's approach to the sugya apparently it just says kipshutai over there in Sanhedrin, that Nehemiah was Katav Rov Sefer Ezra. And that's because this Sefer Nehemiah is actually Rov of the two Sforim. So, I mean, there seems to be part of it was actually written by Ezra, part of it was written by Nehemiah. And what's more, when we get to the seventh parak, we'll see that Nehemiah actually quotes Ezra, the entire census is redone with like a number of fascinating changes in names and numbers and families, constructs and so on. But it's obviously that what he's doing is he's attempting to show the development from the time of Ezra to his time, which itself is the machlokas we're showing him. So let's take a look just at these first few psukim just to get ourselves oriented in time. So, Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachalia, Vayi b'chodesh kislev shnat esrim, v'ani hayiti b'shushan habira. So, I mean, first of all, the Shushan habira is like so striking, you know. It takes you right back to the story of Esther. It takes you right back to standing in front of the child of Esther and Achashverosh, you know, this is Daryavesh. And there he is in Shushan HaBira. What has happened until now, as we know, is that there was this massive beginning at the time of Koresh, which the Gemara ends up saying, well, that was just for Pekita B'Yalma. So, and we know the whole the Gemara's drasha, that Koresh is Mishichi, and the Gemara says, what, Vechi Koresh Mashiachu? And it answers that this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm really upset with you, Koresh. I said that I want you to go and to rebuild Eretz Yisrael, and all you do is you put out some kind of ridiculous Balfour Declaration. You know, anybody who wants to go is allowed to go. This is what I'm asking you. But Lamaisa, this was a Pekita B'Yalma, And we know that things did not go very well. And in the end, even the rights that were given by Koresh, because of all of the Kitvei Sinah and so on that started right away, they were mevatel, the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and there was an 18-year gap and till our rebuilding of Yerushalayim here, till he starts off. And it was only in the sixth year of Daryavesh that we find that the Ezra story finally got the Beis HaMikdash built. But as we'll see here, we're taking up from where Ezra left, because there's not a word in Ezra about the situation of Yerushalayim. And fascinatingly, we have two books, essentially. One book is about the Beis HaMikdash, and that's Ezra's book. And one book is about Yerushalayim, and that's Nehemiah's book. And his entire focus, as we'll see right away, is on Yerushalayim, not on the Beis HaMikdash, which means that he has an entirely different focus, right? Because, I mean, obviously, a Beis HaMikdash is like, it's very suitable for Ezra. You know, it's like this high-level idea of Avedas Hashem, the hopes that the Shekhinah will appear there. Ezra Sofer was roy for Kol HaTorah Kula, which could have been given by him, and that he was like Moshe Rabbeinu at his time. So Ezra Sofer HaGadol, Moshe Sofer HaGadol. Now, this is like the second layer. It's not at all like anything that we saw before. And let's take a look what it is that triggers, amazing things that triggered Nehemiah to want to be the builder of Yerushalayim. So he says, so this is Shnat Esrim. Now the Gemara, it doesn't say Shnat Esrim to whom. And in fact, this is the Mephoshim point out, you can't just say Shnat Esrim if this really was a new book. It's insane. It's a new book saying Shnat Esrim and not say Shnat Esrim to what? That's like, what? Shnat Esrim? So obviously this is a continuation of what we've been talking about before, otherwise you can't say Shnat Esrim. In fact, the Gemara, if you'll recall, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah says Shnat Esrim, Shnat Esrim is Gzeirah Shavah. So later we're going to have Shnat Esrim, where it says Beferish, that it was to Artachshasta, which is Daryavesh. Now, this leads to a massive machlokas Rashi and Tosas, where actually Tosas in the end has a pshat that backs up Rashi also. But as Tosas points out, look, the pashtus of this whole story over here is that the story of Nehemiah must have been before the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Because, I mean, this doesn't make any sense. If in the sixth year of Daryavesh, the Beit was already built, and right, and they make the whole celebration, Shitza, Beit HaDina, and this was like, we finished it in the sixth year. And if this is really supposed to be in the 20th year, so now, during that time, wouldn't Yisrael, says Tosis, already have been in a matzav of Hashketu Bitcha? I mean, they've had the Beis HaMikdash for all these years here. And he brings otherwise from the Gemara. Therefore, he claims, Tosfos, that when it says Shnat Esrim, Shnat Esrim, Gzeira Shavah, it means Shnat Esrim for Koresh, not for the first Koresh, which is basically the third year of Daryavesh, the son of Esther. And it means that he was the one that was triggering the restart of the Beis HaMikdash, because it says, that's the pasuk that the Gemara brings from Ezra, Baden Batelat Avidat Beit Elaha, Ad Shnat Tartin L'Daryavesh Melech Paras. Then Ubishnat Shalosh L'Balcho of Daryavesh. Then we had the words of Nehemiah getting Rishus to rebuild. Now, the truth is, Tosfos says, look, I mean, but that's not what it seems to be the Gemara is saying. And therefore, he says, look, maybe the truth is that in the second year of Daryavesh, indeed they built the Beis HaMikdash. That took until year six, but they didn't do anything about Yerushalayim. It was only the Beit HaMikdash. And in fact, because of that, they had no defense system. They had only the rights to a spiritual life. And this is the way that many of the Mefarshim explain why indeed did Ezra not go on to build Yerushalayim, and explain that in fact Ezra didn't have reshus to do anything except to be a spiritual leader. So in other words, the original reshus that was given to Ezra in terms of a building based on Mikdash is about spirituality. It's about that. That was what he presented to the king. And that this is the same way that Koresh allowed every nation to have their connection to God. This is the connection, you know. And on the contrary, in the Beis HaMikdash, there's korbonos that are brought for all of the goyim. Mamash referenced the sukkahs. And indeed, that's the whole Gemara that Koresh sent korbonos, Tayyavi sent korbonos, and provided for the ongoing coming of the korbonos and so on. But Ezra didn't even dare bring up the issue of whether he could build Yerushalayim, because that would have completely destroyed his shlichut. But that may be logistically, you understand what's going on, but in reality it means that we have two very different madrigot here. We have the madriga of Ezra, where the focus is really on Avodat Shamayim, on the restoration of the Shekhinah, which never happened. Remember that in the Bayit Sheni, the Shekhinah wasn't Shara. You know, so all those dreams never actually reached fulfillment. And instead, everything switches here to something entirely different. I want to suggest that that entirely different is very, very much related to Simchas Torah. And it's the transition to the absolutely lowest level, but the identification of what that lowest level would be of Yisroel, which we'll get back to. And therefore, it starts as follows. So, Vayavochanani, this friend of mine, Echad Miachai, Huvi Anashim Yehuda. So there's this group of people that come up from Yehuda, and I, Nechemia Veshalim Ala Yehudima Pleitash and Nisharu Min Ashevi Val Yerushalayim. So I asked them two questions. How is the Pleita, the people who have survived from the Shevi, and how is Yerushalayim? And as Rashi points, these were two completely different questions. And in fact, they're answered separately. So I asked, Rashi goes out of the way, Val Yerushalayim al inyan ha'ir sha'alti aleihem. How is the city doing, not the people? Which is amazing. What does that mean, how is the city doing? And he has this sense specifically of a loyalty to the city, qua city, utterly aside from the issue of how it is that the Bnei Yisrael are doing. And by the way, there's a big question over here. What is the meaning of Hanisharim Asher Nisharu Men Ashevi Sham Bamedina? What does that mean? And the Malbim uses this to say that there were two completely different groups. All of the people that had never ever left Eretz Yisrael. Those were the Dalata Arts, the people that were left. And there's even an amazing Ramban, as he doesn't say it here in the Chani, he says it in the Masechet Megillah. But the Gemara over there says that there was, the Takana was that the cities that were there, Bimot, Yoshua, Ben Nun, so they have the din of the Dafka, the cities that are Mukafot Choma. Why did they choose that? See, Rushami says they chose that out of a covet for Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban Tainas, that makes absolutely no sense if it made no difference to people that were in those cities, that they were Mukaf Choma. It only would make sense if, and this is what he suggests, which everybody, the Ran goes through a whole list of riots to show that this Ramban makes no sense. He says the most astonishing thing, that even though we have that famous count in Ezra, which only 40-some thousand people came along with Ezra to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, he says that has nothing to do with the number of people that were in Eretz Yisrael at the time. Those were just the people that came up with Ezra. But the fact is that when Koresh had made his proclamation, everybody went back. Then when the Beit HaMikdash building was bought up, okay, so there were people that went back because they gave up hope. So they moved back to Bava because they were disappointed in the period of the Pekida. So in any event, that would mean that there were two groups. the Malbim Tainas that the Ezra group couldn't have been in bad shape because Ezra was empowered by the Melech as a separate group. He had the right and he had the money that was provided for the Melech to provide for them. So what happened to that? Well, how would they attack the people that were under the direct protection of the king? Therefore, Tainas and Malbim were two totally different groups. There was the people that were still living there, that had never been dragged to Bavel, and then there was the Ezra group, but the Ezra group wasn't the Amos' home. However one understands this, what Hanani said to him was, Vayomru li, and you notice that Hanani addresses the two questions separately, Vayomru li, on your first question about the Nisharu min HaShevi, you should know that the Nisharum HaShe Nisharum min HaShevi are there b'medina b'ra'a gedola uv'cherpa. They are in awful shape. They are the lowest of the low, despised by the local population, without any hope. And your second question about Yerushalayim, as Yerushalayim, chomat Yerushalayim miforatzet, the walls of Yerushalayim are completely broken. They're just wide open to anybody. Usha'areha nitzetu va'esh, the same fire from the time of Nebuchadnezzar that had destroyed the city, there has been absolutely no change. But for all intents and purposes, you're coming back here, it's really great. There's a Beit HaMikdash that everybody's celebrating, set in the middle of a churban. He was so shocked at hearing this that he literally, he went into Avelos. Vayi keshomi et advarim ha'ele, yashavti, I get down on the floor, ve'efkeh, and I'm crying, ve'etabela yamim, and for days, if someone loses mamash avelut, that he kept shivas yamei avelut, because it was like hearing a besura ra, and I was in avel for days, ve'etzamu mitpalel lifnei alei ha'shamayim, and I fasted, and I was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so that means that the thing that moved him was the response to his initial concern, not only for the people in the Am, but for the nature of Yerushalayim, for the nature of the Machane. One could say even that in the same way that we know that we have Parshas Nosa, which is an extension of the Mishkan and of the Machane into the Machane Shechina into the Machane of Yisrael itself, and we have over there all the special dinim of the Kedusha that goes on, and the Zeros and the Tuma and so on and so forth. He apparently was doing the same thing. In other words, he recognized that just having a Mishkan is not enough, and there needs to be a zone called Machane Yisrael. And if you don't have that zone, you don't have a place for Yisrael. And that zone, essentially, could very well be the concept that we were talking about on Shemini Atzeret and Hoshana Rabbah, could be the concept of the sukkah, the idea that is making on, like, just like the Anani HaKavod, a place where you can survive. The sukkah tiel etzel yomam. And just as this year, he's looking for the walls of Yerushalayim that are meant to him to become a survival zone, the same idea is that post-Sukkot, we need to find ourselves exactly that, a zone of survival. So that in terms of what we understood, which was the bringing the Umas Ha'elam and developing a theory of mind for the Umas Ha'elam, there is a concept called the theory of mind of Yisrael, which we miss because we only think about the Beis HaMikdash, essentially, meaning the mitzvahs and Aveda and Olam Haba and all the issues that we think about. Or we think about religion. And if we think about Yisrael, it's only within the context of that. And developing a theory of mind about Yisrael would be a completely new world because it gives you something else to connect to. And it makes it possible to grow that space. Whereas, as we know, all of the attempts to recreate the Beis HaMikdash as the place for Yisrael have been so disastrous, because every religious movement and every Baal Tshuva movement, and it's just been a disaster because of the fact that it does not have a sense of Yisrael Kwa Yisrael, and it does not provide a zone of survival. There isn't any zone of survival. It's awful. The truth is, the more religious the community, the more horrific the sense of not having a place is. And it's all, everything is defined exactly as Korach defined it. You know, well, they're all Kedoshim, and every house has its exact, you know, exactly the same pictures of the Kedoshim. And it's like you just feel miserable. Like, where do people live, you know? And this, I think, could be the focus of our meetings. So anyway, this was our introduction. We'll continue on. I'll try to provide some additional focus. Listen to your responses. We'll continue on WhatsApp. I got to run to Myriv. You got to run to life. And I love you all. Go to. Okay.